This is an I Am Listening original podcast.
The other Friday when he launched it, I was giving a speech in Herne Bay for a reform branch, and I said that I think there needs to be someone to lead the right wing, someone to lead the patriotic front, even if it's not Nigel. I got questions over that. And then as soon as I finished my speech, I checked my phone and Rupert Lowe's launched his party. And I feel like that's a sign. That is a sign. I've got to do it.
Welcome to the Kent Politics Podcast.
Hello and welcome again to the Kent Politics Podcast. This week we're here to discuss an upcoming by-election in Thanet, thanks to a KCC member's conviction, and the state of Medway Council's finances. We've also got special guests this week, which are two of the county's youngest councillors, Harry McKenzie, the Labour member for Sturry on Canterbury City Council, and Kira Mischuk, the formerly Reform and now Restore Britain councillor for Milton Regis on Swellborough Council. Naturally, we've got them on to discuss politics and the young and all that sort of thing, which you'll hear a bit later on. Firstly, though, we're here to discuss more current affairs. And Simon, there's to be a by-election for a Kent County Council seat in Thanet, is there not?
Well, we've got a by-election sometime in April, possibly April the 9th, and obviously for a seat on Kent County Council at Cliftonville, which is in Thanet. And it follows the jailing of the former Reform UK councillor Daniel Taylor, who was jailed for a year for coercive control of his wife. This has sparked a by-election. And looking at the state of the parties, it's quite difficult to see who might win. Although Reform took it with 40% of the vote, and Labour got 22% and the Conservatives around about 20. Most of those parties, including the Green Party as well, seem to think that they got a reasonably good chance of taking it. The Tories, sources tell me that the Tories are going to chuck a bit of money at it. The Labour Party think that because they came second in the campaign in 2025 and they're going to fight it on the Reform UK record at Kent County Council. And also the Green Party, one activist said to me, we want to win that one. So it's a big test for the challengers, but it's also a big test for Reform UK.
I guess, yeah, because obviously council elections have very low turnout anyway, and council by-elections have even worse turnout. So I guess at this point, very small numbers of votes can sway it, hence why all the parties are keen to put so much effort in. But obviously in the past couple of weeks or so, there's now a new third largest party on KCC, Restore Britain, the right-wing party led by Rupert Lowe. Are they putting someone up?
Well, the readers may have seen in the press over the last sort of week or two, the Restore Britain group at Kent County Council is now the third biggest, and they're going to put a candidate up. And that may have the consequence of splitting the Reform vote, because obviously it's sort of an offshoot, a splinter group from the Reform group at KCC. And that has given the other parties, the challenging parties, the idea that if they go and work it hard, and I understand the Conservatives in particular are going to chuck a lot at this, they may well sort of find themselves coming out on top. That's their theory anyway.
I mean, that seems that might be the main function of Restore, both locally as well as nationally, is that basically as a spoiler on the votes of Reform UK for those who actually know about them. But do you think they actually stand any kind of chance whatsoever in their own right?
What, Restore winning it?
Yeah.
I think it's unlikely. Somebody said to me the other day that the party or the party machine that works its hardest are the ones who are most likely to win it. So I can see this being quite an interesting and possibly quite volatile election campaign, because this is the first real test that Reform UK and Kent County Council have had since they were elected last May.
And you say it's sometime in April?
Well, I've been told it's April the 9th, but that hasn't been confirmed yet. But okay. It's sometime in April.
Okay. And for the benefit of listeners, as trivia you may be interested, the reason the election has to be held is because he got a custodial sentence of more than 3 months. If you're a politician, you get convicted of something with less than 3 months, you can keep your seat.
Yeah.
And you can't be excluded from standing for public office except for very specific offences like corruption, buying votes, or whatever, like the former mayor of Amherst.
Yeah, and it's a bit of a gift to the opposition parties, so the challenging parties, simply because they also say, well, you know, Reform UK, because they suspended him, you know, a couple of weeks after they got into office, and he's effectively not been there as a serving Reform UK councillor. They're going to use that as a bit of a stick to beat Reform UK with. But it really depends, as you said earlier, but about the turnout. If the turnout is low, that probably is not good for Reform UK. And if Restore Britain, which now claims to have somewhere between 80 and 100,000 members and apparently coming in all the time, that sort of momentum might just rub off the Reform vote. And if it's a low turnout, well, who knows which way the left vote might splinter and where the right vote might splinter, and it might allow the Conservatives to come in through the middle. And I think that's what they're banking on. I'm not sure that really in their heart of hearts that they think they're going to win it, but they probably think that if they work hard enough, then they couldn't turn around and say if they lose and then turn around and say, well, you know, we didn't work it hard enough, that they're going to put a bit of effort in.
I mean, I guess the broader question is, do council by-elections really matter as a barometer of anything? You know, when we're talking about low turnout for a council by-election in a single council seat, we're talking about literally hundreds of people voting, you know, a few hundred, 400 or 500 people. And I've always been of the opinion, I mean, parliamentary by-elections like the one in Gorson and Denton this week, they tend to have quite low turnout, historically at least. And council by-elections are even worse than that. So can you reliably take them as a barometer of anything at all, more than, or is it just a
no,
who throws the most money into sort of targeted Facebook ads in that seat or something?
Yeah, but if Reform lose it,
it'll be embarrassing, obviously.
It's embarrassing, and it just plays into a narrative that will probably play out in the press and on social media, that somehow that, you know, they're not sort of haven't got the gleam that they once had.
Yeah, I think that's the sort of concern for Reform. I mean, there's a lot of interesting elements which you sort of touched on, is the sort of incumbency bias. You know, people who voted Reform last time might, you know, not bother turning up because either they're not particularly fussed
motivated
about,
yeah, this
exactly,
time, yeah.
Yeah, or maybe they've lost interest in Reform. But as you say, you know, if they do lose it, it won't be quiet afterwards. Lots of people were saying, oh, you know, KCC won these elections last year, and already they're, you know, people are turning against them in what was a very strong Reform seat. So I think it will be a very interesting result either way.
And don't forget, they've actually lost, I think it's, what, 10? 9 or 10 of
it's
their original 10, yeah, 10
original. 57 down to 47.
Yeah, 57 down to 47. And that, I think that means that there's 34 in opposition. They only have to lose a few more, and then suddenly it becomes a bit of a problem. Because if there was a big vote at Kent County Council about something or other, you know, something like the budget, you know, you could, you know, with a couple of people missing, it could get very,
very
tight.
Very close, doesn't it? Yeah. Do you think that now there is this, well, I mean, from our point of view, it's exciting that there's this a wider choice of parties, because there's, you know, more for us to look at and examine and pick apart. But do you think that this will encourage more of the general public to come out and vote? Are they bothered by the fact that they've got more choice? Do they understand that what the wider choice that they've got? I just don't know whether we're looking at this and we're quite excited about it all, but is that going to encourage more people to actually come out and put a cross in a box? And, you know, and what that means for them. I mean, they tend to just pick apart the finer points, don't they?
Well, as Dan said, the council by-elections, be they county council, where I wouldn't say that the numbers will be in the hundreds, they'll be in the low thousands. There'll still be a significant number of people. It'll be about getting the vote out. Now, one of the interesting things about this particular division, part of it is quite affluent. Part of it is sort of older, people who live in bungalows and that sort of thing. And then you have a more deprived area, which is sort of on the edges, the outer edges of Margate. Now, that's probably where the Reform vote sitting, and possibly in some of those sort of traditionally maybe more conservative-leaning voters. Should some of those Reform voters go back to the Conservatives? Because the Conservatives still polled 20% last year, and one would imagine they probably will have built on that, not lost. Labour will conceivably have lost some of them to Reform. You see, we don't know where they're going. And the Greens really, really fancy this one. So will it come down to tactical voting? Will the left coalesce behind, say, Labour?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or will, you know, the Liberal Democrats maybe think, well, the Conservatives got a better chance, so we'll go for the Conservatives and let Restore split the Reform vote. This is why this is so fascinating, because although it will be a small number of voters, it will be really, it could come down to literally dozens of votes. Will
make the
difference.
Be interesting to see how many recounts there need to be.
Well, there could be. There could be recounts.
Yeah.
And just lastly, I'm guessing all the parties are currently scrambling to choose their candidates. Do we know how soon those are all going to be announced? Or?
I know that the Conservatives have chosen a guy called Charlie Lees. I don't know about the Green Party yet. The Labour Party are going to announce something in the next day or two. The rest I'm not sure about.
I see. Okay, interesting. So on the other end of the county, I've certainly seen in my calendar that pretty much every local authority in Kent has been approving its budgets this week, to which Medway is no exception. Obviously, you've been looking after that, Rob. How was it? Fun meeting?
It was a long meeting. There were lots of sort of alternative versions, which we'll probably talk about a little bit. But the Labour version, who are in charge, obviously, was involving increasing parking charges for a stays over an hour and reducing them for half an hour or less, which is kind of the big sort of... Labour have for several years now gone with the policy of they're not going to cut services, they're going to increase charges for things like parking, leisure centres and things like that. They did make a couple of cuts a couple of years ago, which for under 16s and over 60s swimming sessions. But by and large, they've broadly gone with that method of, obviously, as lots of councils do, increase council tax by the maximum amount, increase charges. That alongside, of course, exceptional financial support. This year, they had hoped, towards the end of last year, they had hoped that, or they said that they were working towards possibly not needing exceptional financial support this year. But unfortunately, with the fair, I think they were thinking the fair funding review was going to be slightly more generous more quickly than it actually ended up being. So they've had to ask for £10.1 million worth of exceptional financial support. For those who aren't aware, it's borrowing... Basically, it's looser rules around borrowing, so you can borrow for day-to-day spending, which is kind of not usually allowed under council rules. This is something that they did always say when they first started doing this in 2024, that it would be a three-year thing of borrowing this money. But it does bring the total to £60.6 million, which is...
What, of borrowing in the coming year?
No, that's the total since 2024. I think the original figure was 16 million that first year. The following year was 18 million that then rose to 28 million. Then there's this 10 million. It sort of changed around slightly with in-year overspends and things like that as well. So the total over that 3 years is 60.6 million, which has been a big figure that the Conservatives, the Reform UK and the Independent Group have all kind of hit the Labour administration with, basically saying this is borrowing for future generations, the taxpayers of however it shakes out, whether it's the North Kent Unitary or whatever it is, they're going to be paying that in the long term.
Yeah. I mean, I remember, I think it was either last year or the year before, there was some consternation about Medway Council not knowing until literally right down to the wire whether it would get government support, which would stop it from potentially having to file a Section 114 notice, which is the closest a public authority can come to bankruptcy like that. Mm. But I'm guessing that's not a risk this time around. There's no conceivable chance of them going...
Well, so on, it was earlier this week, I think on Monday or Tuesday, that they got official confirmation from the government that they would be getting this 10.1 million that they needed. It's always a bit of a funny thing of they receive, the funding settlement is late in December or early January, and it's always a bit of a pain in the neck when they receive it. This EFS funding, as I say, the budget meeting was Thursday. The confirmation that they got this money, which they based their entire budget on, was on Tuesday. But I think this year, more so than previous years, I think particularly the first year, there was a bit of worry, would they get that exceptional financial support, or would the then Conservative government say, look, we'll just send in a commissioner and we'll, cut the services to a bone ourselves. But since, they basically piled in sort of over £30 million at that point, it would be a bit ridiculous, I think, for particular Labour government to turn around and say, well, we know we've lent you all this money to sort of stave off this bankruptcy and get on a good financial footing, and you are making progress to that, but we're not going to give you that last step. So I think they were fairly confident that they would be receiving this money.
Okay, so I mean, Medway is basically safe from any sort of severe financial problems or filing a Section 114 notice. And as far as I can tell, that seems to be the case with basically every other Kent council that have filed their, approved their budgets this week. Maybe this is just my weariness with the alchemy of public sector finance speaking, but with local government reorganisation looming, I can't help but feel that the budgets of councils are considerably less urgent and less interesting now because there's no there's going to be some kind of funding settlement in the rearrangement of local councils. Obviously, like when they abolished and changed up Northamptonshire County Council a few years ago, all the successor authorities will end up fighting in court over who owns what and who's responsible for what debt. But any sort of immediate risk of Section 114 notices in councils up and down England, like we had a couple of years, I think I remember talking about it on the podcast only a couple of years ago, that there were concerns that this or that council might go bust. All of that seems to have basically evaporated with local government reorganisation.
I don't think the government wants to see any councils go bust just at the minute, because it just would be a terrible look if they were allowing councils to issue Section 114s at this at this point when they want a relatively smooth transition. Because obviously, if a lot of them did go bust, then it probably wouldn't be able to get it through anyway.
I mean, do you think that Medway feels that they're confident and that this is enough? I mean, you know, we work in Medway and a lot of this money has undoubtedly probably gone on adult social services, and that figure is only going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. But, you know, they look after things like the roads as well. I can't drive into work probably without going past 40, 50 potholes in Medway. It's not good. I mean, Medway's not alone. There's, what, 34, 35 councils that have also had this funding. But, how confident do you think they are that this is enough and the budget is going to be okay?
They, from the sort of discussions around preparing this budget and speaking with some officers, they are as confident as they can be, you know, because obviously this is preparing for the next year ahead. They are as confident as they can be that next year they won't need exceptional financial support. And they obviously estimate that there will be further pressures because, as you say, you know, adult social care, children's social care, these sorts of things are constant pressures and they're constantly growing. But they say the sort of estimations of how much it's going to grow and how much our funding might not grow and the shortfall that we might have is much, much smaller than it was predicted, you know, at the beginning of this process a couple of years ago. So I think they are relatively confident. I mean, although they are, you know, one of the big discussions during the debate at the budget meeting was about sort of the bigger projects that Medway Council is engaging in, including building a care home. And both the Reform UK group and the Conservative group basically wanted to scrap this investment to build, I think it's an 80-bed care home on the former Innovation Park Medway site, because it's a £44 million investment, which obviously comes with debt repayments and all this sort of thing. And they said, we can't afford this. Whereas Medway's, the Labour administration's argument back was, well, this is a cost that is growing for us all the time. We're paying for very expensive agency staff. We're paying for very expensive out-of-area placements. And with a growing aging population, we need to do something about it.
You've got to think much longer term.
And, you know, although obviously Medway Council will cease to exist, if they do manage to get this care home built before the end of Medway Council, which is their ambition, I believe, they will, all of a sudden, there'll be a council-owned care home that the North Kent Authority will be able to use for its residents. So they are, although, you know, Vince Maple was quite pleased at the end of the meeting when I spoke to him to say, you know, we've made difficult choices. We've made, you know, we've had to sort of get to grips with this problem and we've had to use EFS, which is not ideal, but that's not stopped us from doing things like this. And part of taking EFS is finding efficiencies, finding cost savings that in the longer term will pay off. A slight, you know, to go back to reform, a slight bit of tidbit that we sort of, I think I mentioned quite a while ago on the podcast and sort of give people an update, was around Medway Council made some changes to the motions and the way it does those, and basically reallocated that larger groups would get more chances to put forward motions. And you may remember Councillor Robbie Lammas, who's the deputy leader of the reform group at Medway Council, because there's three members of reform at Medway, said he was going to pursue a legal challenge against Medway Council if they didn't sort of change their mind on this. He said he got expert legal advice from a barrister on this, who said that he believed that the change was unlawful because it infringed on parties based on their political views and that sort of thing. So the deadline for submitting that was February 13th, and this was a decision that was made back in November. You get a three-month sort of statute of limitations kind of thing to raise a challenge. But unfortunately, he confirmed to me this week that that won't be going ahead, mainly because of the £100,000 price tag that comes with challenging the council. Even though, I mean, he was very clear beforehand that he was very confident that he would win this legal challenge. But unfortunately, I did ask why the Reform National Party didn't support him in that challenge, as he had hoped. But they were too busy, he said, and they also said fighting the legal challenge against the cancellations of the local elections.
Yeah, as well, which they won.
Which they did win. So that meant that they couldn't fight this one against Medway Council. So that change of motions, which was, you know, called unlawful and anti-democratic, will go ahead.
Maybe one can understand why a national political party isn't financing legal challenges against authorities which are soon to be abolished. But it's a shame no date with the High Court for Medway Council and Robbie Lammas.
Is there a topic that you would like to be discussed on the Kent Politics Podcast? Perhaps you've got a question for one of our panel, or you'd like to comment on a hot topic in local or national government. Get in touch by emailing or sending a voice note to kentpoliticspodcast@thekmgroup.co.uk.
It'll be no secret to many of our listeners that politics, especially local politics, is pretty dominated by people who are middle-aged or often older. Despite this, politicians of each and every party are, in their own ways, fixated on trying to understand the political views of the young with a view to converting them into loyal voters. So to dig into this issue, I'm joined by two of Kent's youngest councillors, Councillor Harry McKenzie, the Labour councillor for Sturry on Canterbury City Council.
Hello.
And Councillor Kieran Mischuk, who was elected as the Reform UK councillor for Milton Regis on Swellborough Council, but as of this week sits as a member of Restore Britain.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Thank you very much for joining me. And just by way of credentials, despite the wisdom my voice may suggest, I am 25 years of age. Harry, you're 24, 25?
I am going to be 26 in 2 months.
Well, same here. And Kieran, how old are you?
I'm 19.
I see. And I'm also joined by Matt Ramsden,
who's on the far end of the spectrum in age. Yeah.
I see. Less said about that, the better, I suppose. So obviously, you both sit on quite different ends of politics. Like I said, Harry, you're a member of the Labour Party for a while. And Kieran, you were a Reform councillor, now you're a member of Restore Britain. People of our kind of age cohort, you know, people born as of the millennium or more recently, tend to get into politics in quite different ways compared to the sort of much older members of the political class. So starting with you, Kieran, how did you realise you were interested in politics and that it was something you wanted to be involved in?
Oh, God, it goes a way back to when I was even in primary school, when you saw Trump and Nigel on the telly and saw my parents talking about and my grandparents and neighbours. And I took a fascination even then because I thought, these people are standing up to, like, the Prime Minister, the President of the United States. Like, these people mean it. They have a conviction in them. And that inspired me. And then just, I've always liked history. I've grown up basically with my grandparents and older people. And I've heard stories of how they used to live. And it's not like how I live, you know. And that played a big part. So I look at the history. And I look at the political scene, and over my teenage years, I've just kind of evolved, and then led to being in the year 13 at sixth form, and Reform was this insurgency party. It was this you know, party I don't want to be part of. It's dodgy, you know, but what they're saying, it makes sense to me. And I became a member when I was at school, and I remember all my friends saying, "What are you doing? You're an idiot, right? Vote for Reform. You're just gonna Labour get in. Why not be part of the Conservatives like everyone else?" No. And then quickly after, I emailed around to the reform people in Kent and asked if I can go to meetings. And I remember the first meeting I went to was in Maidstone, and it was organised by Paul Thomas, who's now the leader of the Restore Britain group. And he's a great friend of mine. Everything he says is so true, and he's so grounded, and he really is such a good person. And he helped me. He helped me. He said, "Please, I want you to speak. Please speak at an event." And I did. I'd never spoken in front of anyone before, and it was 80 people, and I was stressing, and because I wouldn't even talk in class. I was really, really, really shy. I've always been like that, but that really brought something out in me, and it made me realise, no, if I want to do something, I can do it.
Harry, how did you get into politics?
For me, it's always been about service and helping people. So as I was growing up, you know, I came from a family where it was very public service oriented. I grew up with my mum as my role model. She's a social carer, and I spent my entire childhood watching her go to work where she helped people. And wanting to do the same thing, wanting to follow in the same footsteps. And I remember getting to about 19, 20 years old and thinking, how am I going to do that? I was doing a sociology degree at the time and I was thinking, how am I going to use this to help people? And I couldn't really figure it out. And then I thought politics was a way in which I could be involved with many different things and I wouldn't have to choose one thing or the other and help people on a much more structural level. And so I got involved with the Labour Party and I started going to meetings and joining on the campaign trail. Didn't help that just as I joined, COVID started. That was a bit of a tumultuous start to politics, I've got to say. But it worked out in the end. I realised eventually, you know, having said that I wanted to get into politics to help with various things for various people, it was... It's very easy to get burnt out that way because there are so many things in politics. It's so huge that you really do need to specialise eventually. And I realised I wanted to break down my political involvement to housing, which fits with what I do as a counsellor. And it's something that kind of touches on many other areas as well, from tackling violence against women and girls and helping people with their mental health and helping people with their cost of living. So it seems like a common sense thing to specialise in if I wanted to help the most people. I suppose I'll touch on the reason why I chose Labour was because, well, I come from a very working class family. It's like as far back as I can think, my great grandparents working in the paper factories in Ashford, to my grandmother working in helping people with social security, to my mum as a social carer. We are the sort of people that the Labour Party was always there to serve. And, you know, we noticeably did see our lives get better under the last Labour government. And it got worse under the Conservative coalition government following 2010. And we'll always be grateful to Labour for what they did to us between 1997 and 2010. And yeah, that's a large part of why I'm here doing what I do. Mm.
So I guess it's kind of the elephant in the room. It has to come up in any discussion of politics, especially for young people at some point, but it's so much of the political culture of the country in general, and also within political parties and of people who are politically involved, is conducted on social media. For young people to be involved in politics means essentially to be on social media, particularly to be on X, formerly Twitter. You know, it's where, if you're a member of the Labour Party, you follow and retweet and look at articles written by people of the same kind of faction of the Labour Party as you. If you're on the right, it's where you, I guess, do more or less the same thing. Would it be fair to assume both of you were pretty sort of plugged into politics through social media quite early? It's the kind of thing, you know, you see Facebook pages and Twitter pages of sort of politicians you're interested in. The degree of that surely shapes your politics quite a lot.
Well, for me, actually, I'd actually say no. Actually, I'd say no. It's only recently that I really got involved in social media. I actually preferred to just... obviously, I played games when I was a teenager and played with friends and stuff, but I'd never really got involved in social media until I got involved in politics, and it was the big thing, right?
Yeah. So politics came before
social media? Oh, yeah. It was talking to people, talking to my neighbours, talking to my family members, going on walks and seeing how this country's kind of falling. You know, that's what got me in.
So I did start off quite early on with social media, but I kind of went off it after a while. I mean,
understandable reaction.
I remember when Elon Musk took over Twitter, that was it for me. I left after that. I couldn't stomach that, considering, you know, the vitriolic things that were starting to come out on that platform following that, and the way he was just letting it happen. But no, I also had a much more profound realization that, you know, you don't change anyone's life on social media. Like, when you put a tweet or a Facebook post up, you're not going to put food in someone's belly or the lights on in their home. And I do a lot of social media as a counselor, but that's just because, you know, when you're a counselor, you're an elected representative, you have to be accountable to the people you serve. And I need to tell them what I'm doing and why I'm doing it, and, you know, give them an opportunity in a place where they are to be able to ask me questions or share their points of view with me. So I do quite a lot of social media on Facebook now, because that's where you can get the most access. But I don't really like doing social media just for personal reasons or politically.
Do you think it might be cause for concern? So for example, it's relevant obviously because this week, Kieran, you joined Restore Britain, the party led by Rupert Lowe. And that's, you know, a party led by one member of parliament. I don't know how many members it has. Well, it's not registered as a party yet, I don't think. I don't know how many members it has. But no doubt,
100,000, near 100,000.
No doubt a big reason why Rupert Lowe will have made the decision to form that as a proper party, or to even think he had the political gravity to do so, would be the fact that he has something like 600,000 followers on Twitter. He has, I think he made the most money out of any MP in Parliament last year from posting on Twitter. He made something like 40 grand. Mm. is that healthy that basically a social media reach on what is, even though it's very well used, still a website that engages a very small minority of people can encourage the formation of political parties? That's pretty novel and unusual. It used to be that a party had to form because it had huge numbers of local representatives or people sort of organically coming together, like the way the Labour Representation Committee formed to represent trade unions in the early 20th century. Whereas now it's, yeah, one rich guy with millions of followers on Twitter, and he's, I've got the grab. It's given him the idea that he's got the support to form a party.
Well, you're never going to win. You're never going to win. The Labour Party will want millions of followers online. So will Nigel Farage. All of them. They all fight for it. Rupert's got it. And online, people have the ability to speak for themselves. And I know that it's not just online, because in the last few days, when I've been thinking about going to Restore and then doing it, I've had people stop me on the street. And these are much older. These are people in their 60s. They like Restore. They have seen it on Facebook, but that's how you get a message across, right? That's how you communicate with people nowadays. It's a new dawn. This is a new dawn.
And you think it's unavoidable at this point? Yeah. If parties want to be serious, they have to have big reach on social media.
Of course. When I was in Reform, they were all like, we need to up our social media. We need to up our social media. But one thing that Reform don't get is I've been pushing for it, and a lot of other younger members in Reform have been pushing for it, which is a different strategy. They are trying to attract the older people, and it's bland. It doesn't attract
older people. Decide almost every election that at least have historically done. So they might say that strategically that makes sense.
There's a lot of young people in this country who are fed up and want a future, and they don't typically vote. But I think in the next elections there'll be much more, because we have very few years to save our countries and our futures.
Do you feel that sort of, among people of our sort of age cohort and younger, Harry, do you feel that sort of appetite for change and sort of increased political mobilisation? Do you think people from, say, 16, because they're going to be able to vote next time, 16 to, say, 24, 25, are in the mood for something quite different?
Yeah, I definitely think that young people want a politics that's going to work for them. They want elected representatives to do things that's going to make their lives better, for sure. And after, you know, 14 years of the Conservatives ruining everything with a brutal austerity agenda, it's, you know, things can't move fast enough for young people. And I think this current Labour government has realised that things may not be moving fast enough for young people who really want that change, who really want that structural transformation of the way things happen in this country for them. And I suppose it's a good thing that this year certain policy initiatives from like the Employment Rights Act and the Renters Rights Act will come into effect. They will finally be felt, and hopefully a lot of young people will finally start to feel like, you know, politics is a place for them to come back to, that things are happening, that there is something for them to be a part of here.
Do you think that might be part of why there is at least a, in part because of social media, there is a kind of received wisdom that young people, if they are involved in politics at all, are moving towards relatively radical options? For example, the Green Party suffered a massive increase in membership and support recently in the polls, largely considered down to Zach Polanski's relatively radical leadership. And for example, Restore Britain is, I'm sure, will be marketing itself at the kind of young people who were involved in Reform and disenfranchised with it. Do you think maybe that leaves parties like Labour in quite a lot of trouble?
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, like, I suppose the issue is there's always that difference between a party in government and a party in opposition. When you're in opposition, you can say a lot of things, a lot of great things that you want to do to help people, but you don't actually have to do them. So you don't have those budget constraints. You don't have those long waits once something's been passed for it to be implemented. But in opposition, you have that golden opportunity to criticise and to say that we would do this instead. And it's very different when you get into government. It slows down because you've got to jump through those hoops. You've got to do things by the book. You've got to do it properly. You've got to do the consultations. You've got to make sure it's all fully funded and fully costed. And I think the Green Party and the Reform Party and some of these other insurgent parties, they benefit from not being in power and not having to jump through those same hoops that they would have to if they were in government right now.
Coming back to your point, it's I think this was inevitable anyway. I think this insurgency parties wouldn't be inevitable without social media, but they obviously help because people get a voice. People are able to say what they think. And for so long, people have been scared to say an opinion. They've been scared to criticise the actions of the government. They've been scared to criticise migration, the economic situation. They have been scared to do that. And online now, a year ago, you wouldn't be able to call for millions to go, but now you can. And there's a lot of support for that. And there's a lot of support for that on the ground level as well. And yeah, of course, it's easy to make promises. But what we've seen for the last 70 years is governments getting in, promising everything, promising anything. But there's no drive. There's no motivation. I'm voting for Labour because my family voted Labour. I'm voting for the Conservatives because my family voted Labour. What about something new? What about something with new energy? I joined Restore because the energy's there. I like that. I'm driven by that. My gut was yearning for it. I believe what Rupert Lowe says. He is a statesman. I believe what he says. And I know that a lot of other people do. And if you have a belief and you are passionate about it, why the hell is anything impossible?
And you think Restore will actually pick up seats in next general election?
100%.
I was interested in what you said, Kieran, at the very start. You talked about conviction. You were impressed by the conviction of a Nigel Farage and a Donald Trump. You had the conviction to join Reform. You've now got the conviction to leave them as well. Yeah. What was the final straw? What pushed you over the edge to leave Reform?
Well, the final straw. I mean, I was actually thinking about leaving it when I got elected. I can't lie. Even early on, when I was running for Milton, I got told by headquarters, they were trying to put a leaflet on, and it was not what I wanted to fight for. I wanted to fight for Milton, not about migration. And I didn't want Nigel's face over it, because Nigel's not going to run. Nigel's not even going to come down to Milton. And I was told, I'm 18. What do you know? What do you know about elections? I've run multiple elections. I've won. Da, da, da. So I should shut him off, and I did my own thing. I won. And it was then, that was a spark. Then Rupert Lowe, how they treated him. I believed him. He said what a lot of people are thinking, right? And when he got kicked out, I had to make a lot of phone calls to my friends in Reform to keep me to stay. The other Friday when he launched it, I was giving a speech in Herne Bay for a Reform branch, and I said that I think there needs to be someone to lead the right wing, someone to lead the patriotic front, even if it's not Nigel. I got questions over that. And then as soon as I finished my speech, I checked my phone and Rupert Lowe's launched his party. And I feel like that's a sign. That is a sign. I've got to do it.
That's interesting. I mean, you were literally thinking of leaving Reform on the very day you're standing to be elected on their behalf.
Where's the grassroots support?
Yeah.
We have a lot of grassroots members, but they don't realise that there's a top-down.
How many votes did you win in the election?
272.
Yeah. How many of them voted for Reform? How many of them voted for you personally?
Well, that's the debate. That is the debate. People voted Reform in that. Milton is a funny by-election because the Labour MP was messing about. They wanted something different. I mean, Reform wasn't meant to win. This was Labour's strongest seat in Swale. And I was 18. I know a lot of people voted for me because it was me, because they saw an 18-year-old on the door. They were impressed by that, and they wanted something new.
But this would also be part of the rationale for why Reform headquarters were telling you, you know, you put Nigel Farage's face in your leaflets, because everyone, you know, and this is why I...
Nigel's Marmite.
Yeah, obviously, but he has brand recognition in a way which
didn't
almost,
work. Then
was he on the leaflets in the end? Did you tell him not?
No, I thought we need symbolism. I'm a big believer in symbolism and what something looks like, and I wanted to make a leaflet that looked modern, looked different, something people are going to look at and go, "Wow, I've never seen something like this before." And I think that had a part to play.
I just want to ask you a question that everybody who's ever defected gets asked. So you probably know what's coming. A lot of people would have voted for you because they were voting for Reform. They're voting for the party. Isn't it the right thing to do now you've left Reform to call a by-election and go
so
again?
The same for all the Tories that have come over.
I'm talking about you.
That is the one thing that held me back from not doing it on day one. That is the one thing that held me back, because people did vote for a Reform mandate, and that is the hardest thing for me to do, because I love Milton. I do. But then I think that for me, and what I've talked to a lot of people in Milton about it. I've talked to people in the three hats in the pub, and they think it's the best thing for me to do, to join Restore. And it's about convincing people that this is the right thing to do. I believe in Milton. I don't think you can elect. I can trigger a by-election. Reform could win it, but I can guarantee that that person will not care about Milton the same way I do. Milton's changed my life, and I'm incredibly grateful for it, for all the people who vote for me.
Harry, what do you make of that? If someone, Canterbury City Council, up sticks, leaves the Labour Party or whatever, surely you'd be saying people voted for the party mandate. Everyone knows people vote for the party mandate, even in local councils. Surely they should call a by-election if they don't, if they change their party.
Yeah, so I completely agree with that. And I said the same thing back in whenever it was when Christian Wakeford defected, that I thought there probably should be a by-election. And... I just think when a lot of people, when they vote, I mean, everyone votes differently, don't they? But a lot of people vote for the party, not so much the individual. I mean, when I stood, I'm not convinced most people in my ward knew who I was as an individual.
You might be the first councillor I've heard to actually say that, because everyone has an interest in believing that they have some kind of personal support when the evidence suggests it doesn't really exist.
Well, I mean, don't get me wrong. I put a lot of very hard work on the doorsteps and putting together the leaflets. But yeah, I think we have to be honest about the way politics works sometimes. But when someone says they want a Labour councillor, they should get a Labour councillor. And that's my belief. I mean, I don't think we can take away people's choice like that. That's no offence to you, Kieran. I mean, like, we all have our own positions on this, but that's just my position.
But my opinion, and I know that this is another opinion held by a lot of people, party politics has broken Britain. I don't care about party politics. I mean, the parties don't care about the little people. They're not the ones that come down, like the big organisers. They don't care.
Britain will in some way be different.
I think Restore, what I joined Reform for was, I thought it was a movement. It was a movement, and then it's quickly become a party of loyalties. And if you are loyal to the party, if you go up to Gordon and Denton and canvass for them, then you will be an MP. You have the chance to be an MP. And if you don't, you won't have that chance. What the hell's that? What if someone has a kid and they generally cannot go up, they can't afford it, right? That's not giving a good image. Restore is that movement. It has progressed. I want to be part of a movement. I don't, you know, party politics is silly. It is so silly, and it has broken Britain. A movement would be much better because it's hopefully led by the grassroots, by the actual people, not being dictated from the top down.
So as I feel like we've probably all had a reasonably similar experience that basically, but when you're quite young, say school age, and you're interested in politics and get quite obsessed with it, frankly, with the proportion of young people who vote and so on, frankly, it is a bit eccentric. And to be into, if you're somebody who's serious about politics as a young person, it's easy to develop a reputation for being that guy who's super into politics.
Yeah.
Why do you both think that people of our kind of age aren't into politics? Well, and have you both had this kind of experience where, you know, when you're in
Where's sixth the passion?
Form or whatever, everyone Where? In RE class knows you as a loudmouth or whatever.
Where's the passion? There's no passion. No offence to these people, but I could vote for a 50-year-old man who's seen life and, you know, done everything, but he hasn't got the drive, right? He's got things he can lose, so he won't take the big risks. I've got nothing to lose. I mean, I've got my whole life to lose potentially, but I've got nothing to lose and I've got everything to gain, I believe, and that's why I'm so passionate about this. This country is everything to me. It's everything to me.
Do you think politicians themselves, basically, because they're old, grey and boring, young people just aren't interested?
This country's, what are you going to do? Vote for the same thing that we've had for the last 100 years, the same type of politician that's led us to this point. You could vote for a Thatcher, you could vote for a Tony Blair. I'd consider them quote-unquote reformers of the system, right? They are reformers of the system, and I've come to the realisation that Nigel will just be one of them if he gets elected. He'll be another Tony Blair or Thatcher, where he'll reform the system, but 20 years down the line, we'll be calling for something else as well. But we need to restore what we've lost. We've lost so much. It's just managed to climb for so long.
So you're quite critical of Nigel Farage and Reform now, but a few weeks ago, you're on national TV saying how great he was and what...
He was the only person at the time. I did... The thing is, on that interview, it was cut out. I'd talked about Rupert Lowe a lot. It was cut out. But Nigel at the time was the only one who's going to lead it.
Yeah.
And you've got it.
There's a contradiction in what you're saying, Kieran, because
I couldn't say it out loud or I get kicked out.
But why appear on national TV and fly the Reform flag if you don't believe in it? If
it was really hard for me.
Are you not just like another politician?
I believed in the movement and the people behind it. And obviously, it's easy to say Nigel's the one, right? It's easy to say that because you can say, Keir Starmer's the one. He's not. You know, internally, he's not.
Yeah.
But Nigel is good. He is very good. And he's given credit where it's due. He's a great politician. But
do you have aspirations for Parliament? Would you consider standing?
Only if people want me there. Yeah. That's the thing.
That's a cop out. Come on. Do you want it? Would you like to be MP for Sittingbourne and Sheppey, where you live?
Well, obviously that comes up a lot. I mean, that'd be a great honour. If people thought I could do it, then I'd do it. But I wouldn't put my name on any papers if I wasn't asked to do it. Yeah. I believe that.
But this, sorry, Dan, but this will come up again and again. Mm-hmm. How can people trust you if you're saying that you didn't believe in the project and went on national TV?
Because I don't think my views are that different. I thought that the beliefs I have now, the same beliefs I had back then, but Nigel was the figurehead. And, you know, I have such a respect for Nigel. If it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be doing this, right? I wouldn't be doing this. But the way he's acted and the way he backtracks and he seems to betray the grassroots and how the HQ's been continually formed and all the problems I've had in the party, I'm not going to make public when I'm in Reform because I'll just lose it and then I will just become nothing, right? I'll become nothing. I do have to take charge of my own life. It's everything. If I get kicked out of Reform because I say that I don't like Nigel Farage, which is very easy. It's very easy. People are so scared. There is like a fear of that in there, and I know it is because I've spoken to so many people about it. But yeah, you know, if they caught wind that I was going to do this jump to Restore earlier, I'd have been kicked out. right? And that's happening for other people. I know that. But I'd be stupid to sacrifice it then. You've got to play. Politics is about timing. It's about, you know, it's about strategy.
I feel like this is something that comes up a lot when you speak to people involved in politics and other young politicians come up, is that essentially there's an assumption that any young person involved in politics must be, because it involves so few people as a proportion of the public, must be sort of cynically careerist and have aspirations in that direction. And I've seen that everybody, you know, nobody gets into politics, I think, because they see their career ending as a district councillor or something like that. Everybody will at least entertain the idea of wielding more power than that. So I want to ask, last I checked, there is a vacancy to be the Labour candidate for Canterbury at the next general election, since Rosie Duffield is no longer a member of the Labour Party. Harry, is that the kind of thing that would ever interest you?
Absolutely not. I have no eyes on Parliament at all.
Why is that in particular? What, you just think it's too much strain in your life? Not a fun place to be?
I just prefer being closer to communities and being away from my constituency or my ward or whatever for 4 or 5 days of the week to be looking over bills in Parliament. I'd rather be in the place where I am, whether that be a workplace or as a councillor, getting hands-on with the people that I'm there to look after and the things I'm supposed to do. And that's my position on it.
So it's been sort of implicit, but obviously Kieran has mentioned essentially the suggestion that part of why young people aren't involved in politics to the extent that they could and should be is that the parties of the establishment, the parties of the 20th century in particular, for example, Labour, are at this point quite hollow. You know, Labour guards its membership figures jealously now, won't even release them. And I'd be comfortable assuming that young members there are times in history when the Labour Party has credibly claimed to be the party of the young. After the Second World War, perhaps in the 1960s, and especially under Jeremy Corbyn, I feel like you'd be very pressed to claim that. Now, do you think parties like your own have to answer for the fact that they are a big part of why young people aren't involved in politics?
Yeah, and I think I alluded to this earlier that, like, I mean, the government came out earlier this year and kind of, you know, recognised that things aren't moving fast enough. And for a lot of young people are going to be feeling that too, that Labour did promise a lot of things in the last election that by all means they're still committed to delivering. But it just takes time when you're in government. We can't, like, nobody in government can snap their fingers and make things in the manifesto appear. Personally, I think it's not so much the party. I think it's more the system. I think it's how slow things move and how difficult it is to actually implement things. And any party at all would find that. It's not limited to anyone. You know, Labour did come out with a really bold policy agenda at the last election in the manifesto, particularly for young people. And we have delivered quite a lot of it. You know, from April, the two-child benefit cap's going to be gone. That's going to lift 450,000 children out of poverty. So, we are doing some really bold and radical things. It's just, it takes time to implement them is my position on that.
Yeah, I understand that. I mean, it's true. I mean, whatever party is in charge, it's trying to turn around a super tanker, isn't it? It takes time. But you talk about bold policies and all the stuff that Labour's trying to do. But a couple of weeks ago, we had this shambles of them trying to get rid of Keir Starmer. And you just wonder, you know, not so long ago, you won a landslide general election. You've got a lot of things going your way. Where's it gone wrong?
Again, I think it's just the slowness of everything. I think people are so desperate for change, and a lot of elected politicians, a lot of our members, they want to be able to look the people that they serve in the face and say, we're doing this for you. They don't feel it's coming fast enough. And yeah, I think there is an impatience. And I'll just reiterate again, you know, the government has said this year is the year where lots of the bills that have been passed are going to be implemented, and hopefully that will start turning things around and things will start to go on the uptick.
Yeah. What did you think of the whole move against Starmer a couple of weeks ago?
I think that this government has done a lot of really great things, and there's much further we need to go. And I don't think now is the right time to change the captain. And I think right now, instead of fighting within ourselves, when we're facing battles from the left and the right for literally the soul of our country, this isn't just policy matters. This is actually, like, it goes down to the root of what we believe in as a country. We need to be looking outwards, and we need to be coming together as a party and facing down those siren calls from the left and the right. So yeah, that was my take on it.
I mean, I think the system's broken. The system's broken. Doesn't matter what party you get in, the system's broken. I want a party that's going to come in and completely destroy what the system
is. It's a nifty phrase, a great soundbite. System's broken. What's it mean in real terms?
The whole Westminster system, all the bureaucracy, all the bills, the hundreds of years of laws that are in there, it's so broken. It's so broken. No matter what party you get in,
are you not meant to be? Are you not meant to be a fan of great venerable British traditions of parliamentary democracy?
Well, it's when if MPs cared. I mean, I know a lot of them do care, but if they were long term strategists rather than short term, because a lot of this stuff is short term. It's just to change it. If it was long term, the country would be in a much better place, I think, in my opinion.
So it seems that you, in an indirect way, you both kind of understand what the political stakes of Britain in the 2020s in the same way. You both seem to recognise that there is political questions being asked which are bigger than just what is the top rate of income tax, what is the specific legal punishment for this. There are politics is now about
you can move the pawns on the chessboard, but yes, yeah.
you were talking about, for example, the fact that it's now acceptable to for a politician like Rupert Lowe to openly say, yeah, millions of people must be kicked out of this country. This seems to suggest to me that, yeah, politics is now about fundamentally capital P political questions, who belongs and who does not. And do you think this is driven by a sense that young people, a minority of politically engaged young people in particular, want to feel like there is a force which proposes something radical, and therefore you have parties like, you know, Zach Polanski's Green Party and Rupert Lowe's Restore Britain calling for policies which, you know, 10-15 years ago would have been considered outrageous, and then now they're acceptable in large part because of, sort of quite radical young people.
We see them promising to change a little bit, move just gradually. I mean I sit in the council chamber and I think we're just like just making a motion to like change a little tiny thing that's kind of so insignificant. We need something that comes in and actually just changes it, just wipes it out. Parliament is sovereign, and Parliament can do whatever it wants if it does that. And this country is crumbling, and I really believe we need. I love Cromwell. Cromwell was a big inspiration to me.
Are you a monarchist, though?
Well, I don't know. Actually, I mean, the royal family's they're great figureheads, but you know, they're a bit dodgy. What Cromwell did?
Cromwellian monarchism.
Lord Protector and all that. Well, Charles I, you can go down that rabbit hole. You know, he shut down Parliament. It was the Lords running the country, running the show, like in the 1200s with Magna Carta. It's like every 400 years, there's a big switch, big change, and we're now at that 400 year point where it's 400 years since Cromwell.
Interesting. I know young people are disproportionately Republican, but often on the right, they're monarchists. Harry, care much for the monarchy, or do you? Have we found a rare outbreak of consensus here?
This is not really a policy matter. I spend my time looking into. So I genuinely don't know. To be honest,
I respect the royal family. I respect that it's a big tradition of ours, but I also respect that England is greater than just the royal family. England is the countryside. It's the animals. It's the folk songs. It's the dress. It's the maypole. All that sort of stuff. The farms. It's lovely.
So, Kieran, let's stick to a local level for a second. So you become the leader of Swellborough Council, and you're all powerful. Yeah. What do you do first?
Well, there's not much you can do as a leader of a council. Well, it's right. Westminster.
Say if you could do. Say if you had a pot of money and you wanted to affect change in your community, what would you do?
Oh. It's really difficult because I've never really thought about that.
Okay. But you want to smash down the system. You must have thought of ways that you can improve people's lives.
You got to get into Westminster first. Literally, you have to. This is the problem. You know, you could probably change it. The local politics is basically pointless. And the thing is, I feel like it's designed to destroy it. You get someone who's passionate coming into local politics going, I want to sort out the bus routes and da 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 da. I knew that couldn't be achieved.
Okay. So let's move the example on then. If you're in the cabinet, you've got a responsible job, you can affect change in people's lives. You want to smash the system. What are you going to do?
You've got to strip the civil service, completely strip it. You've got to completely strip the powers of the Supreme Court, the House of Lords, a lot of the privileges that are given, and you've got to give power kind of back to the people. You've got to have a lot more referendums. You've got to have strong things. You've got to deport people.
What power will me and Dan have that we don't have at the moment?
What do you mean?
Are you going to give this power back to us?
Well, people have a say, right? People don't feel safe, and because.
But would you reduce? You say more referenda, for example. Would you reduce this to say, do you think Restore Britain should have basically a plebiscitary democracy on every policy issue, you know, have a referendum on on deportation of people from Pakistan. How far can it go?
Of course, some of it's wishful thinking, I guess. But the whole system is just broken, and you won't truly know it until you get into the top bits. But there's a lot of restrictions there's so much red tape. There's so much restrictions on being able to do something. If you want to deport a criminal, you have to go to the ECHR. Might step in and say no. All the international stuff. Tentacles.
Harry, I'd like to hear your views on that as well. But is that a uniquely British problem? I mean, if we were to go anywhere else in the world, they'd have their civil service, said, have their bureaucracy.
Yeah,
their
and all those, I mean, all those countries across Europe, you've got the same thing going on. They're struggling for their identity. Yeah.
But isn't that the world? You need a bureaucracy to run things.
Why do we have to be the same as everyone else? Why can't we be different? Britain's always been different. We used to rule the world. Why can't we be different?
Harry, do you have any great enthusiasm for issues of democratic reform, you know, more referenda, get rid of the House of Lords? Surely even a Labour government would have things to gain from this.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we have an elections bill coming up, and I'm really excited about the fact that 16 or 17 year olds are going to be able to vote come the next election. And there is some Lords reform. You're going to have to give me, this is not something I know a lot about. I know sort of like a surface level. But I know this is something that is being looked at really closely. It's good that 16 and 17 year olds, many of whom do work, do have caring responsibilities, have education, you know, they have, like, they're often looked down on as if they don't have experience of life, but they do. And they're going to get a say on things that affect them now. And I think that's a really good democratic reform that this government's putting in place.
I guess we'll be able to test our theory about whether radical people are that young when 16-year-olds can vote next time.
Also, the other issue is, it's like you can vote for anyone and it doesn't mean you'll get it. You don't, you know. You got, again, I could come back to what I said earlier. You need someone in power who is passionate about it and you know will do what they say.
Maybe it'll be the 16-year-olds which deliver Rupert Lowe as Prime Minister.
Oh, that'll be glorious.
But anyways, Kieran, Harry, thank you very much for joining me.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thank you.
So we're back in the studio after we've just heard that conversation between us and Councillors Mishuk and Councillor Harry McKenzie. Obviously a pretty different sort of pair of voices that you often hear in local politics. That's why we got them on, you know, because they're a couple of Kent's youngest councillors. Matt, what did you make of that?
Yeah, I thought it was great, Dan. I mean, I was really impressed with both of them. Both young guys sort of starting their political journey. Very different approaches. I thought Harry was quite traditional in his views and quite on message with what they're trying to do in the Labour Party. Kieran's an interesting guy. Obviously, he's stood for reform, is then left for restore, and he seems like a man in a hurry, but I'm not quite sure where he's going.
No, I see what you mean. I think this is quite it's quite a sort of common affectation with young people who are on the relative political fringes. I don't mean that as offensive, Kieran Mishuk. I think it's quite normal for people, you know, young people who are in parties like the Socialist Worker Party, be quite the same. But it kind of expresses itself as this slightly directionless radicalism, where it's like against everything there is, against all the existing parties, want to, in his own words, rip up and tear down the system. But there's not an immensely detailed theoretical or practical idea of what is meant to follow that. You know, he said he was said the civil service was obstructing government policy. You know, it may or may not, but not too much argument about why that is or isn't legitimate and what it could look like. You know, said he kind of likes the monarchy, kind of doesn't mind. That seems like quite a pressing question that you should, as somebody into radical politics, you should probably have a firm view on. And same with that House of Lords reform, for example, voting systems, all these, I mean, he might have immensely detailed views on these issues, but it seems to me that, and this might be the position of Restore Britain in general, is that it's this so focused on being anti-establishment that it doesn't seem to have too many positive policies, except for maybe the slightly weird predilections of its online members, like, for example, a policy paper they released this week on stand your ground laws and arguing that you should be allowed to kill burglars who break into your home, which seems a slightly odd thing to spend your time on.
I mean, it's all good fodder for people on the right wing who really go into sort of very simple solutions for quite technical problems. I think with Kieran, I mean, what struck me about him was the fact that he admitted that he was thinking of leaving reform on the evening he was elected to represent them on Swale Council. I thought that was quite surprising. And following that as well, he appeared on Laura Kunzberg's BBC documentary Inside Reform, where they followed people around to see if reform are ready for government. I mean, he was sat on the sofa with his nan, been interviewed quite a bit by Laura Kunzberg, and you know, you couldn't have had a bigger reform supporter. So he's gone on quite a journey. And as you say, Dan, he was talking a lot about sort of tearing down and ripping up, and we'll get rid of the civil service, we'll do this, we'll do that. But there's no real substance to how do you do that and what comes next. And I think what you'll find is that when you get to a general election, sort of rhetoric will only take you so far. You know, the average sort of middle of the road person, you know, wants to know what happens next.
Yeah, I think in terms of he said he was considering jumping ship at the point he was elected. Again, I think this is something that's common to radical and fringe political parties is that they either inspire tremendous lifelong loyalty from their members and supporters, or incredible promiscuity. You get it from parties on the fringe of the far left, like the Communist Party of Great Britain, the Communist Party of Britain, the SWP. You get people who've either been in these parties for 40, 50 years, or people who've bounced between all of these different sects for all kind of different reasons. But to the credit of those kinds of parties that have a longer intellectual background which they can draw on, and like a longer historical tradition which they're inspired by, unlike, for example, Restore Britain, they have, you may think they're empty slogans, but they have ideas of what the state should look like after this sort of quite severe rupture and sort of quasi-revolutionary situation that they think Britain should be in. Whereas Restore Britain obviously doesn't have that. I called it in my column last week the party of Twitter, and I'm sorry to say, it still kind of seems like that to me.
Is there not a chance, though, that they do start eating into some of the reform support? And you do see a hemorrhaging of councillors across the country to Restore. You don't see them as a threat to reform at all?
I think it's more of a threat to the councillors and their standing on elected councils than it is actually at the ballot box. It's the kind of thing, if you're a councillor, you're already plugged into politics, you're more likely than not on social media, you will be aware of these splits between Rupert Lowe and the rest of Reform in a way that normal people are not aware of that. I think I said it in the interview, the fact that Rupert Lowe has massive reach on social media, 600,000 followers on X, I think has given him and his supporters a massively inflated sense of his of the actual relevance of Restore Britain. And it just so happens to be led by an MP. But I think a lot of councillors may leave it. It looks like a tempting option to sort of dissatisfied Reform councillors, because it's a ready-made party of the right that they can bail to. But actually at the ballot box, is anyone, people know Reform UK, they know it has the party Nigel Farage stands for. Restore Britain, it almost comes across like one of those, you know, in Russian elections, they have spoiler candidates who have the exact same name as a candidate for the opposition or whatever to vote for that. It comes across like that. I think people will look at it with complete confusion. I think unless something massive changes, I think at the ballot box in future local elections and general elections, I really don't think they'll go anywhere.
I think you also have to have a totemic figure, especially if you're a kind of an insurgent party. I mean, although Farage has been kicking around for decades, I mean, you've got a new sort of young, charismatic guy like Zach Polanski who's coming in. Maybe that's one of the things that's energising younger people to take part in local politics. And I think it's a good thing. I personally think the more younger people that you can have in a council chamber, the better, because they are, quite frankly, of an age, most of them. And that's not being rude, but it's usually because it's become a bit of a job, which requires a lot more time than most working people have. So, you know, younger people engaged and motivated to do it, I think it's no bad thing, no matter what party they belong to.
Yeah, definitely. But you mentioned how you need like a sort of totemic figure. I think that's true.
That's what young people, you know what I mean? They like to be able to recognise someone that they identify with. And that's where Polanski's very, very good at communicating that in ways that someone like Ed Davey and the Liberal Democrats should be doing so much better in the polls than they are. And yet you have that one character who comes along and says some very, very radical and outlandish things, but absolutely, a bit like Nigel Farage has always got away with some of the outlandish and frankly, sometimes unbelievable things that he's got away with. You can, if you've got that sort of presence. And
I'm not sure it's healthy, though, that political parties seem, in line with them being increasingly social, sort of social mediatized, they're also much more personalist, where if you don't have a kind of leader who can inspire something like a sort of mild online personality cult, your chances are pretty minimal. You know, Kieran was talking quite a lot in the interview. He was like, I believe Rupert Lowe, I support Rupert Lowe, he's the real anti-establishment candidate. And I mean, that's good as far as it goes, but political parties built around one person with a slightly nebulous sense of their ideology are, I don't think, stable. It's not really a basis for long-term democratic politics is a party which revolves around one person, which is also why, for example, Nigel Farage's enterprises have often collapsed shortly after his departure from them. The referendum party, UKIP, and God forbid, if something happens in future and Nigel Farage left Reform UK, I don't think it would survive him as well. I don't think that's a healthy trend in politics.
Yeah, but do you think anyone would be able to, if you put a lineup of sort of men in their sort of mid to late 60s, would they be able to point out Rupert Lowe?
No, I'm not sure I could. So. But I think they would be able to point out Nigel Farage.
Oh, well, they absolutely would, yeah.
Okay, that's it from us for this week. Thank you very much for listening. Next week, we'll be back with our regular weekly podcast, updating you on the political news from around the county. And in a few weeks, we'll be back again for another bumper edition with plenty of special guests and debate. Until then, you can keep up to date with politics in Kent at Kent Online. You can also sign up to our politics briefing newsletter at kentonline.co.uk/newsletters. And don't forget to tune in to KMTV's politics show every Friday at 5 p.m. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for listening to the Kent Politics Podcast. Don't forget to check out stories throughout the week on the politics page of Kent Online. And you can watch the Kent Politics Show on KMTV every Friday at 5 p.m. or on demand at kmtv.co.uk.
This has been an I Am Listening original podcast. For more information, head over to our website, im-listening.co.uk.